The corner of his mouth lifted. You want to get to know me? She looked away, glaring. I'm being forced to spend time here, right? Shouldn't I get to know my jailer better? So dramatic, he muttered, and fell quiet, considering. He wanted to answer her questions because he wanted her to understand his perspective, but he wanted control. He wanted the ability to limit, to explain until understanding was achieved. He wanted to be able to ask her questions, too. Oh, no. Persephone's voice drew his attention, and he raised a brow. What? I know that look. What look? You get this look, she explained, and paused, like she did not quite know how to explain. He liked watching her search for the right words, brows knitted together over her pretty eyes. When you know what you want. Do I? He asked, and couldn't help teasing her. Can you guess what I want? I'm not a mind reader. His question flustered her, her cheeks turning crimson. She might be more of a mind reader than she thought. Pity, he said. If you would like to ask questions, then I propose a game. No, she said flatly. I'm not falling for that again. No contract, he promised. No favors owed, just questions answered, like you want. She lifted her chin and narrowed those lovely eyes, and he had the fleeting thought that he would like for her to look at him like that while she rode his cock hard and fast. Fuck me, he thought. Fine, she agreed at last, but I get to pick the game. His instinct was to reject her offer, and the words were on the tip of his tongue. No, I hold the cards. But as he considered the consequences, he thought it might be a chance to show her he could be flexible. Finally, he grinned. Very well, goddess. He led Persephone to his office, where he had watched her walk with Hecate earlier. He left her alone for a few minutes, long enough to change, and when he returned, she was standing near the windows. At his appearance, she looked at him over her shoulder. His steps faltered, and he paused in the doorway, staring. She was beautiful, wreathed in the landscape of the underworld. This is a beautiful view, she said. Very, he breathed, and then cleared his throat. Tell me about this game. She grinned and turned fully toward him. It's called Rock, Paper, Scissors. She explained the game, demonstrating the various shapes, rock, paper, and scissors, with her hands. Despite her enthusiasm, Hades was not impressed. This game sounds horrible. You're just mad because you haven't played, she countered. What's wrong? Afraid you'll lose? Hades laughed the question off. No, it sounds simple enough. Rock beats scissors, scissors beats paper, and paper beats rock. How exactly does paper beat rock? Paper covers rock, Persephone said. That doesn't make sense. Rock is clearly stronger. Persephone shrugged. Why is an ace a wild card? Because it's the rules. Well, it's a rule that paper covers rock, she said. Hades smiled at her retort. He had smiled more in the last hour than he had in his lifetime. Ready? She asked, lifting her hand and forming a fist. Hades mimicked her movements, and she giggled. Clearly, this was amusing for her, and he groaned internally. The things he did for her already. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot! She spoke the words with fervor. She was definitely having fun, and for that, Hades was glad. Yes! She shrieked, arms flying into the air. Rock beats scissors! Hades frowned. Damn, I thought you'd choose paper. Why? Because you just sang paper's praises, he explained. She giggled some more. Only because you asked why paper covers rock. This isn't poker, Hades. It's not about deception. Isn't it? He disagreed. He was certain if he played this game long enough, he would learn her tendency to choose one of the three options over the others. It was an algorithm, and most people had a pattern, even if they did not realize it. Silence stretched between them for a moment, Persephone's earlier excitement subsiding. The atmosphere was changing, and Hades did not like it. He wanted to recapture their earlier reverie, not explore darker secrets. Suddenly, he wondered if he could distract her, close the distance between them, and press his lips to hers. But she looked away, took a breath, and asked, "You said you had success before with your contracts. Tell me about them." Hades pinched his lips together before retreating to the bar across the room to pour himself a drink. The alcohol would help him loosen up and hopefully prevent him from saying something he regretted. "I wanted a chance to explain," he reminded himself. He took a seat on his black leather sofa before answering. "What is there to tell? I have offered many mortals the same contract over the years. In exchange for money, fame, love, they must give up their vice. Some mortals are stronger than others and conquer their habit." It was a little more complicated than that, and as he spoke, he could feel the threads that covered his skin burn from every failed bargain he had made with the Fates. "Conquering a disease is not about strength, Hades," she said as she sat opposite him, folding her legs beneath her.
"No one said anything about disease."
"Addiction is a disease," she said. "It cannot be cured. It must be managed."
"It is managed," he argued.
He managed it by holding mortals to their agreements, reminding them of what they would lose if they failed, their life. "How? With more contracts?"
"That is another question," he snapped.
But she seemed unfazed and lifted her hands, signaling she was ready for another round. Hades sat his drink aside and mirrored her stance. When she landed on rock and he scissors, she demanded, "How, Hades?"
"I do not ask them to give up everything at once. It is a slow process."
He did not want to admit that he had given no way for mortals to manage their addictions. It was up to them to find ways to come clean. When he did not elaborate, they played another round. This time, to Hades' relief, he won.
"What would you do?" he asked, because he was curious and he had no answers.
She blinked, brows furrowing.
"What?"
"What would you change to help them?"
Again, he felt a prick of frustration when her mouth parted in surprise at his question, but her expression quickly changed, becoming determined.
"First, I wouldn't allow a mortal to gamble their soul away."
He grumbled at her critique, but she continued.
"Second, if you're going to request a bargain, challenge them to go to rehab if they're an addict, and do one better, pay for it. If I had all the money you have, I'd spend it helping people."
She had no idea of his influence or how he maintained balance by bargaining with the world's worst to feed the world's deprived.
"And if they relapse?"
"Then what?" she asked, as if it were nothing. "Life is hard out there, Hades, and sometimes living is penance enough. Mortals need hope, not the threat of punishment."
Hades considered her words. He knew life was hard, but he knew that because he could see the burden upon souls when they arrived on his doorstep, not because he actually understood what it was to be mortal and to exist in the upper world. After a moment, he lifted his hands as she had done before to signal another game. When he won, he took her wrist and turned her hand over, laying her palm flat, fingers brushing the bandage tied there.
"What happened?"
Her laugh was breathy, like she thought he was silly for asking. "Just a scrape. It's nothing compared to bruised ribs, I promise."
Hades' jaw tightened. Perhaps there was no comparison, but he did not like that he could not keep her from being hurt in his realm. In truth, this was a small part of a greater fear, that he could not protect her from those who would wish to harm him. After a moment, he pressed a kiss to her palm, sending a shock of magic into her skin to heal the wound. When he pulled away, he met her heated stare.
"Why does it bother you so much?" she whispered.
"Because you are mine,"
he wanted to say, but those words froze in his throat. He could not say them. They had known each other for a week, and she had no knowledge of the thread that bound them together, only the bargain that forced her to be here. So instead, he touched her face,
He wanted to kiss her, to somehow communicate this desperate need he had to keep her safe in every way. But just as he started to lean forward, the door to his study opened, and Minthy entered the room. She stopped short, her eyes narrowing into slits. Had he not commanded her to knock?
"Yes, Minthy," he asked, his jaw clenched. She had better have a good reason for this interruption, but he doubted that was the case.
"My lord," she said tightly, "Karen has requested your presence in the throne room."
"Has he said why?" He did not try to hide the irritation in his voice.
"He has caught an intruder."
"An intruder?" Persephone asked, her curious eyes falling to Hades.
"How? Would they not drown in the Styx?"
"If Karen caught an intruder, it's likely they attempted to sneak onto his ferry," he replied, standing and extending his hand for her to take.
"Come, you will join me." If she was curious about him and his realm, she would want to be present for this anyway. Perhaps she would see the demand mortals placed upon him. She pressed her fingers into his palm, and he led her down the halls of his palace to his cavernous throne room, with Minthy leading the way. In the beginning of his reign, Hades had used this room more often than any other part of his palace. It had been the one place souls had feared more than Tartarus, because it was a place of judgment. He would sit upon his obsidian throne, flanked by black flags bearing golden narcissus, and cast souls into a bleak eternity without a second thought. Then he had been ruthless and angry and bitter, but now this was his least favorite place in his realm. Karen waited for them, his brown skin ignited against his white robes. He was a daimon, a divine creature that ferried souls across the river Styx. He met Hades' gaze before it slipped to Persephone, his dark eyes sparking with curiosity. Beneath his gaze, Persephone started to withdraw her hand from his, but Hades' grip tightened. He guided her toward his throne, manifesting a smaller one beside it, composed of the same jagged edges, but in ivory and gold. He gestured for her to sit, and knew she was about to protest.
"You are a goddess. You will sit on a throne."
Those words were similar to what he was really thinking. "You will be my wife and queen. You will sit on a throne." She did not protest. After she took her seat, Hades did too, turning his attention to the daimon.
"Karen, to what do I owe the interruption?" he asked.
"You're Karen?"
Hades' jaw tightened, not only at the goddess's interruption, but at the evident admiration in her expression and tone.
It was true that Karen did not look as the upper world depicted. He was regal, a son of gods, not a skeleton or an old man, and he was about to face a stint in Tartarus if he did not wipe that grin off his face.
"I am indeed, my lady."
"Please call me Persephone," she offered, her smile matching his.
"My lady will do," Hades interrupted. His people would not call her by her given name.
"I am growing impatient, Karen."
The ferryman bowed his head, probably to hide his laughter and not out of respect, but when he looked at Hades again, his expression was serious.
"My lord, a man named Orpheus was caught sneaking onto my ferry. He wished for an audience with you."
"Of course," he thought, "another soul eager to beg for life, if not their own, then another's. Show him in. I am eager to return to my conversation with Lady Persephone."
Karen summoned the mortal with a snap of his fingers. Orpheus appeared on his knees before the throne, his hands tied behind his back. Hades had never seen the man before, and there was nothing particularly remarkable about him. He had curly hair that stuck to his face, dripping with water from the Styx. His eyes were dull, gray, and lifeless. It was not his appearance Hades was interested in anyway. It was his soul, burdened with guilt. Now that interested him. But before he peered deeper, he heard Persephone's audible inhale.
"Is he dangerous?" she asked.
She had posed the question to Karen, but the daimon looked to him for an answer.
"You can see to his soul. Is he dangerous?"
Persephone asked, looking at Hades now. He was not sure what had him so frustrated about her question. Perhaps it was her compassion?
No.
Then release him from those bindings.
His instinct was to fight her, to scold her for defying him in front of a soul, Charon, and Minthi. But looking into her eyes, seeing to her soul how desperate she was to see compassion from him, he relented and released the man from his bonds. The mortal was unprepared and hit the floor with what Hades felt was a gratifying clap. As he picked himself up from the floor, he thanked Persephone. Hades grinded his teeth. Where is my thanks?
Why have you come to the underworld? Hades' question was more of a bark. He was finding it hard to contain his impatience. The mortal stared into Hades' eyes, unafraid.
Impressive or arrogant? Hades could not decide.
I have come for my wife. I wish to propose a contract. My soul in exchange for hers.
I do not trade in souls, mortal, Hades answered. The fact that his wife had died was an act of the fates. The three had deemed her death necessary, and Hades would not interfere.
My lord, please.
He held up his hand to silence the man's pleas. No amount of explaining divine balance would help, and so Hades would not try. The mortal looked to Persephone.
Do not look upon her for aid, mortal. She cannot help you.
He might have given her free rein over his world, but she could not make these decisions.
Tell me about your wife, Persephone said.
Hades' brows knitted together at her question. He knew she was challenging him, but what was her aim?
What was her name?
Eurydice, he said. She died the day after we were married.
I am sorry. How did she die?
Hades should discourage this line of conversation. It would only give the man hope.
She just went to sleep and never woke up.
Hades swallowed. He could feel the man's pain, and yet there was still guilt weighing heavily upon his soul. What had he done to his wife? Why did he feel such guilt at her passing?
You lost her so suddenly.
Persephone sounded so sad, so forlorn for the man.
The fates cut her life thread, Hades interjected. I cannot return her to the living, and I will not bargain to return souls.
He noted the curl of Persephone's delicate fingers into a fist. Would she attempt to strike him? The thought amused him.
Lord Hades, please!
Orpheus choked.
I love her.
His eyes narrowed, and he laughed. He loved her, yes, he could sense that, but the guilt told him the mortal was hiding something.
You may have loved her, mortal, but you did not come here for her. You came for yourself. I will not grant your request. Charon?
Hades leaned back in his throne as Charon obeyed his command, vanishing with Orpheus. He would return the man to the upper world where he belonged, where he would mourn like other mortals for his loss. In the silence, Persephone seethed. He felt her anger billowing. After a moment, he spoke.
You wish to tell me to make an exception.
You wish to tell me why it's not possible,
she snapped, and Hades' lips twitched.
I cannot make an exception for one person, Persephone. Do you know how often I am petitioned to return souls from the underworld?
Constantly.
You barely offered him a voice. They were only married for a day, Hades.
Tragic, he said, and it was. But Orpheus was not the only one with this kind of story. He could not spend time feeling for every mortal whose life did not turn out the way they expected.
Are you so heartless?
The question frustrated him. They are not the first to have a sad love story, Persephone, nor will they be the last, I imagine. You've brought back mortals for less. Her statement took him back. To what did she refer?
Love is a selfish reason to bring the dead back, he replied. She had not yet learned that the dead were truly favored.
And war isn't?
Hades felt his gaze turn dark. The anger her words inspired burned through him.
You speak of what you do not know, goddess.
The bargains he had struck to return wartime heroes weighed heavily upon him. But the decision was not made lightly, and he had not been swayed by gods or goddesses. He had peered into the future and saw what lay ahead if he did not agree. The sacrifice was the same, a soul for a soul, burdens he would carry forever, burdens that were etched into his skin.
Tell me how you picked sides, Hades, she said.
I didn't, he gritted out.
Just like you didn't offer Orpheus another option. Would it have been relinquishing your control to offer him even a glimpse of his wife, safe and happy in the underworld?
He had not thought of that, and he did not have long to think on it in the moment either, because Minthi spoke. He had forgotten the nymph was still in the room.
How dare you speak to Lord Hades?
Enough! Hades cut her off and stood. Persephone followed. We are done here.
Shall I show Persephone out? Minthi asked.
You may call her Lady Persephone, he snapped. And no, we are not finished.
He registered her shock for only a moment before turning to face Persephone. She wasn't looking at him, but watching Minthi leave. He drew her attention, his fingers touching her chin.
It seems you have a lot of opinions on how I manage my realm.
You showed him no compassion, she said, and her voice trembled.
Compassion? Did she not remember their time in the garden, when he had showed her the truth of the underworld? Was it not compassionate to use his magic so that his souls may live a more peaceful existence?
Worse, you mocked the love he had for his wife.
I questioned his love. I did not mock it.
Who are you to question love?
A god, Persephone. That man's guilt was not for nothing.
Her eyes narrowed.
All of your power, and you do nothing with it but hurt.
Hades flinched. He could not help it. Her words were like knives.
How can you be so passionate and not believe in love?
He laughed bitterly and said, Because passion doesn't need love, darling. He had said the wrong thing. He knew it before the words left his mouth, but he was angry, and her assumptions made him want to hurt her in the only way he could, with words, and it worked. Her eyes widened, and she took a step away as if she could not stand being so close.
You are a ruthless god.
She vanished, and he let her go. If she had not accused him of only hurting others, he might have tried to help her understand his side of things. He might have even told her of the guilt he perceived upon Orpheus's soul, but he could not bring himself to do it. Let her think the worst.
Chapter 13. Redemption.
Hades stood before the desolate plot he had gifted Persephone. There had been no changes in the soil, still dry as bone, still no signs of life. She had not been here in 4 days. She had not returned to visit Hecate or Asphodel, or water her garden. She had not returned to him. You are a ruthless god. Her words echoed in his head, bitter and angry and truthful. She was right. He was ruthless. The evidence was all around him, and he saw it now, standing in his palace garden, surrounded by beautiful flowers and lush trees. It was in the illusion of beauty he maintained, in the charities he supported, in the bargains he made. It was his attempt to erase the shame he had felt at who he once was, merciless, heartless, suspicious.
Why are you moping?
Hecate's voice came from behind him. I am not moping, Hades said, turning to face the goddess. Cerberus, Typhon, and Orthrus sat obediently at her feet. She wore sleeveless robes, crimson in color, and she had wrangled her long, thick hair into a braid. Hecate arched her brow.
It looks like you are moping.
I am thinking, he said.
About Persephone?
Hades did not respond immediately. Finally, he said, She thinks I am cruel. He explained what had transpired in the throne room, recognizing his tendency toward bargaining, this for that, not compromise. Persephone had been right. He could have offered Orpheus a glimpse of Eurydice in the underworld. Perhaps he would have learned then why the mortal felt such guilt at her passing. "She did not say you were ruthless for the reasons you think," Hecate said. The god met her dark-eyed gaze. "What do you mean?" "Persephone has hope for love, just as you, Hades, and instead of confirming that, you mocked her. Passion does not require love? What were you thinking?" Hades' face felt warm, and he scowled. He hated feeling, especially embarrassment.
"She's frustrating."
"You're no walk in the park either." Hecate leveled her stare.
"Says the witch who uses poison to solve all her problems," Hades grumbled.
"It's far more effective than moping."
"I am not moping," Hades snapped, and then sighed, pinching the bridge of his nose. "I'm sorry, Hecate."
She offered him a half smile. "Tell me what you fear, Hades." It took him a moment to find the words, because he did not really know himself.
"That she is right," he said, "that she will see no more within me than her mother."
"Well, lucky for you, Persephone is not her mother, a truth that is just as important for you to remember."
He supposed it was just as unfair to keep comparing her to Demeter as it was for Persephone to compare him to Demeter's words, but there was a part of him that wondered why he agonized.
It was just a matter of time before the fates took their scissors to these threads that held them entwined.
"If you want her to understand, you must share more."
"And give her more fodder for the articles she wants to write? I think not."
He was still frustrated by her visit to Nevernight, only to discover she was there to accuse him of destroying mortal lives. Hecate raised a brow. "I have never known you to care what other people think, Hades." And now he knew why he never bothered before. Because caring was a nuisance.
"She is to be my wife," Hades said.
"And does that not give her a right to know you differently than anyone else?" Hecate asked. "Over time, she will learn you, how you think, how you feel, how you love. But she cannot if you do not communicate. Start with Orpheus."
When Hades returned to the castle, he found Thanatos waiting for him in his office. The god of death appeared paler than usual, his vibrant eyes dull, his red lips drained of color. Normally, he had a calming presence, but Hades could feel his unease, and he shared it.
"We've had another," Thanatos said.
Somehow, Hades knew what the god would say, even before he opened his mouth. It was as Hades anticipated. Sisyphus had not been content with merely avoiding imminent death. He wanted to avoid death altogether.
"Who this time?" Hades asked. "His name was Aeolus Galani."
Hades was quiet for a moment, crossing the room to his desk. It was an attempt to walk off some of the fury he felt toward the mortal who was defying death and harming others.
"His soul?"
Thanatos shook his head. Hades slammed his fists on the desk. A fissure appeared down the center of the perfect shining obsidian. The two gods stood in silence for a moment as each of them processed how to move forward.
"What connection does he have to Sisyphus?"
"There is only one. They were both members of Triad," Thanatos replied. "Our sources say Aeolus was an elevated member of the organization."
Hades' brows lowered. He understood Sisyphus's motives for killing Alexander. He had been an underling, someone whose addiction had led to a debt. Sisyphus had seen him as disposable, but a high-ranking member of Triad was different. His death was like declaring war. What had motivated Sisyphus? Had he learned about Hades' encounter with Poseidon? Was he hoping to send a message? Did he think himself invincible now that he was in possession of the relic?
"The fates?" Hades asked after a moment. "Furious."
He was not sure why he asked. He knew they were in an uproar.
He had not visited their island since he had returned Atropos' scissors, and even that had been an ordeal. As soon as he had entered, the three began lecturing and threatening. He could only imagine how they sounded now, wailing in a horrible refrain, threatening Hades in the only way they knew how, to unravel what he had always wanted. He was already doing a fine job of that on his own.
"What will we do?"
Thanatos asked, and his voice was quiet, full of a melancholy Hades felt in his chest. He turned, straightened his tie, and buttoned his jacket. "Summon Hermes," Hades answered. Thanatos's pale brows furrowed.
"Hermes? Why?"
"Because I have a message to send," Hades said. Lucky for Hermes, it would not even require words. Hades left the underworld and teleported to Nevernight. He had expected to go about his usual rounds, wandering unseen among the mortals and humanoids crowding the floor below, sending his staff to deliver passwords to the lounge above before ascending to Bargain. Except when he arrived, he was summoned to the balcony by Ilias.
"My lord,"
the satyr said as Hades approached.
"Yes, Ilias?"
He nodded to something in the distance, and Hades' eyes narrowed as he followed.
"That nymph, I believe she's one of Demeter's, here to spy on Persephone."
Demeter had all types of nymphs in her employment: Elsids, Daphne, Melia, Naiads, and Crinae. But this one was a dryad, an oak nymph. She wore a glamour, probably hoping that she would go unnoticed. But Hades could see her green skin beneath the magic. Even if her nature was not apparent, it was obvious she was up to something. Her eyes roamed the crowd, seeking and suspicious. She was clearly looking for someone. "Has Lady Persephone arrived?" Hades asked, keeping his tone neutral, and yet, after the embarrassing conversation he'd had with Hecate in his garden, he could not help being hopeful.
"Yes,"
Ilias responded, and Hades felt a mix of relief and tension build inside him all at once, a push and pull that made him eager to see her.
"The nymph followed her in. I didn't prevent her from entering in the event that you wish to speak to her."
"Thank you, Ilias," Hades said. "Have her removed from the floor."
At Hades' request, Ilias spoke into his mic. In seconds, two ogres emerged from the shadows. The nymph's eyes widened at their approach, one on either side. There was a short exchange, but she gave no fight and allowed the two creatures to escort her into the darkness of the club. They would leave her in a small, windowless room to wait until Hades was ready to confront her.
"You know what to do," Hades said. "I'll be there shortly."
Ilias would conduct a background check on the nymph, learn her name, her associates, and her family. It was an arsenal of sorts, a way to weaponize words so Hades could obtain what he wanted from the nymph, for her to defy her mistress.
"Oh, and Ilias, make an appointment with Katerina when you are finished."
Katerina was the director of the Cyprus Foundation, Hades' nonprofit organization. If he was going to help mortals the way Persephone desired, he was going to have to create something special, and he knew just when to unveil the project: at the upcoming Olympian gala. He left the balcony and called up his glamour, moving unseen across the floor of Nevernight in search of Persephone. She had to be in the club, because he had sealed the entrances to the underworld to keep her from coming and going without his knowledge. As he searched the shadows, he came upon Minthy, who was engaged in an argument with Mekonnen. Hades rolled his eyes. There was nothing unusual about this. The nymph fought with everyone in his employment.
"We are not a charity," Minthy was saying.
"She is not asking for charity."
Despite Minthy's anger, Mekonnen remained calm. It was a trait Hades admired in the ogre, who he had appointed to Duncan's position.
"She is asking for the impossible. Hades does not waste his time on grieving mortals."
There was truth to that, and yet, hearing the words out loud, hearing them spoken in a tone so careless and so crass, sent a spear right through his heart. Is that what he had sounded like when he had dismissed Orpheus? No wonder Persephone had been appalled. He was suddenly at odds with the way Minthy and Persephone perceived him, as it struck him that they thought similarly. Minthy expected him to refuse a mortal in distress, and Persephone assumed the same.
"Since when do you decide what Hades considers worthy, Minthy?"
Mekonnen asked, and Hades felt true appreciation for the ogre.
"A question I'd very much like to hear the answer to," Hades said, stepping from the shadow.
Minthy whirled to face Hades, the surprise on her face evident in her raised brows and parted lips. Clearly, she did not have as much confidence speaking on his behalf when he was present.
"My lord,"
Mekonnen said, bowing his head.
"Did I hear right, Mekonnen? There is a mortal here to see me?" "Yes, my lord. She is a mother. Her daughter is in the ICU at Asclepius Children's Hospital."
Hades' mouth was set in a grim line. The Asclepius Foundation was one of his charities. There were elements of being the god of the dead he did not like, and one of those was the death of children. As much as he understood the balance of life, he would never quite accept that the deaths of children were necessary.
"The child isn't gone yet, my lord."
"Show her to my office," Hades instructed. He started to walk away but paused. "And, Minthy, I am your king, and you shall address me as such. My given name is not for you to speak." Hades crossed the floor of his club with Minthy on his heels. The nymph grabbed his arm, and Hades whirled to face her.
"You forget your place," he hissed.
She did not even flinch, just stared at him with furious eyes. She was undaunted by his anger, fearless of his wrath.
"Any other time you would have agreed with me," she snapped.
"I have never agreed with you," he said. "You have assumed you understand how I think. Clearly, you do not."
He turned from her and headed upstairs, but the nymph continued to follow.
"I know how you think," the nymph said. "The only thing that's changed is per—"
Hades turned on her again and lifted his hand. He was not sure what he had intended to do, but he ended up clenching his fist.
"Do not say her name."
The words slipped between his teeth, and he spun, throwing open the door to his office. He sensed Persephone and Hermes inside, but did not see them. Years of existing in battle kept him from hesitating in the doorway, but he was on edge, and he could not deny that the thought of them hiding in this room together sent him spiraling.
Why are they in here together to begin with? Is this why he did not locate her on the floor earlier?
He gritted his teeth harder than necessary.
"You are wasting your time,"
Minthy bit out, pulling him from his thoughts and redirecting his frustration. He wondered what she was referring to, the mortal or Persephone.
"It's not like I'm running out," Hades snapped.
Minthy's lips flattened.
"This is a club. Mortals bargain for their desires. They do not make requests of the god of the underworld."
"This club is what I say it is."
The nymph glared. "You think this will sway the goddess to think better of you?" His eyes narrowed and he snarled as he spoke.
"I do not care what others think of me, and that includes you, Minthy. I will hear her offer."
Her severe expression relaxed, eyes widening, and she stood in stunned silence for a moment before leaving without another sound. Hades was glad to have a few seconds to get a grip on his anger, and it was even more important because he was aware that he had an audience. Persephone's and Hermes' magic brushed the edges of his own, igniting his blood in a way that made him want to rage. But before he could spiral, the doors to his office opened and a mortal woman entered. She was disheveled, like she had dressed hastily, the neckline of her sweater draped off one shoulder, and she wore a long coat that made her body look like a balloon. Despite her haphazard appearance, she held her head high, and he sensed determination beneath her broken spirit. Still, she froze when she saw him, and he hated the way it made his chest feel. He knew why he was the enemy of the world above, because he was shouldered with the blame for taking all loved ones away, because he had done nothing to contradict those ancient beliefs about his hellish realm, but that never bothered him until tonight. "You have nothing to fear." Her voice shook as she laughed.
"I told myself I wouldn't hesitate. I wouldn't let fear get the best of me."
Hades tilted his head to the side. There were very few moments in his life when he felt true compassion for a mortal, but he felt it now for this woman. The core of her soul was good and kind and simple. She wanted for nothing but peace, and yet she had the opposite. Hades spoke in a quiet voice.
"But you have been afraid for a very long time."
The woman nodded, and tears spilled down her face. She brushed at them fiercely, hands shaking, and offered that nervous laugh again.
"I told myself I wouldn't cry, either."
"Why?"
"The divine are not moved by my pain."
She was right. He was not moved by her pain, but he was moved by her strength.
"I suppose I cannot blame you," she continued. "I am one in a million pleading for myself."
She was one of a million who had made the same request, and yet this one was still different. "But you are not pleading for yourself, are you?" The woman's mouth quivered, and she answered in a whisper,
"No."
"Tell me."
"My daughter?"
The words were a sob, and she covered her mouth with her hand to quell her emotion. After a moment, she continued brushing at her face.
"She's sick. Pineoblastoma. It's an aggressive cancer."
He studied the woman. The hurt dwelled within her broken soul. She had struggled to conceive. After several devastating miscarriages and painful treatments, she finally had what she wanted, a perfect baby girl. But at 2 years old, she started having trouble walking and standing, and all the elation the woman had felt turned to despair. Still, beneath that horrific sorrow, he could sense the hope she still had for her daughter, the dreams she still dreamed for her. The woman had fought to have this child, and she would fight to keep her on Earth, even if it killed her. And it would. Hades' fists tightened at the thought.
"I wager my life for hers."
Many mortals had offered up the same, the life of one they loved for another, and no one meant it more than the mothers who begged at his feet. Still, he would not accept. "My wagers are not for souls like you."
"Please,"
the woman whispered.
"I will give you anything, whatever you want."
A humorless laugh escaped him.
"What do you know about what I want?"
he wanted to say as his thoughts turned to Persephone.
"You could not give me what I want."
The woman blinked, and she seemed to come to some sort of unspoken conclusion, because she hung her head in her hands and her shoulders shook as she sobbed.
"You were my last hope. My last hope."
Hades approached her, placed his fingers under her chin, and brushed her tears away.
"I will not enter into a contract with you because I do not wish to take from you. That does not mean I will not help you."
The woman inhaled sharply, her eyes widening with shock at Hades' words.
"Your daughter has my favor. She will be well and just as brave as her mother, I think."
"Oh, thank you. Thank you."
The woman threw her arms around him. He stiffened, not expecting her to react physically, but after a moment, his grip on her tightened before he pulled her away.
"Go, see to your daughter."
The woman took a few steps away.
"You are the most generous god."
Hades' lips twitched as he chuckled.
"I will amend my previous statement. In exchange for my favor, you will tell no one I have aided you."
The woman's brows rose.
"But..."
He held up his hand to silence her. He had his reasons for asking for anonymity, among them that this offer could be misinterpreted. He could offer her reassurance that her daughter would be okay because she was not dead yet, just in limbo. It was not the same as Orpheus asking for Eurydice's return to the upper world.
Hades had more control over souls in limbo because they were like wild cards. Their fate was undetermined. There were various reasons for this. Sometimes the original destiny needed to change, and the fates used limbo as a mechanism to alter lives. Sometimes the soul themselves did not know if they wished to live or die, and limbo was used as a way to give them time to decide. Finally, she nodded and then broke into a smile, tears streaming down her face.
"Thank you."
She turned on her heels.
"Thank you."
Hades watched the door after she left. The satisfaction he felt at helping the mortal dissolving into something unpleasant once he was alone, with Hermes and Persephone still hiding in his office. He turned, his magic surging, and forced the two out of the mirror over his fireplace. Hermes, having been in these situations numerous times, was prepared and landed on his feet. Persephone wasn't so lucky. She landed on her hands and knees with a loud thud.
"Rude," Hermes said. "I could say the same," Hades replied, his eyes quickly shifting to Persephone as she got to her feet, dusting off her hands and knees.
She looked different, but he assumed that was because of the way she was dressed. She wore a white tank top and black pants, and her hair was piled in a bun on top of her head, exposing her angled jaw and graceful neck. He liked her like this. She seemed comfortable.
"Hear everything you wanted?" he asked her.
She glared at him.
"I wanted to go to the underworld, but someone revoked my favor."
He had not revoked her favor. He just kept her from entering the underworld before he had a chance to talk to her. Unfortunately, he now needed to talk to Hermes, and without an audience. He turned to the god of mischief.
"I have a job for you, messenger."
Hades snapped his fingers and sent Persephone to the underworld. Hermes raised a brow, looking particularly judgmental.
"What?"
Hades snapped.
"You could have handled that better." "I did not ask for your opinion."
"It isn't opinion, it's fact. Even Hecate would agree with me."
"Hermes," Hades warned.
"I can summon her to make my point."
"You are in my territory, Hermes, lest you forget."
"And I am your messenger, lest you forget." They glared at one another. Taking relationship advice from Hermes was like asking Zeus for the same. Pointless.
"Lucky for me, it isn't your messenger skills I am after, God of Thieves."
Chapter 14. A Battle of Wills. As Hades made his way to the underworld, guilt pressed in on his chest. It was akin to having stones stacked upon his body, and he thought of Hermes' words,
"You could have handled that better."
But as he considered his actions, he saw no other way. He was asking Hermes to steal, and he would rather not explain himself to Persephone, even if he felt he had good reasons. But he agonized. Was this a time when he should have communicated? Should he have told her the whole history behind the mission he had assigned Hermes? That he wanted the god of mischief to intercept all of Sisyphus's shipments? In effect, Hades was dismantling his empire. Or would it have merely sufficed to ask her to give them a moment of privacy? And at that thought, he suddenly understood why he had not extended such an offer. She had essentially spied on him, and he had reacted with anger instead of calm rationale. He groaned. He was a fucking disaster at this. Still, he went in search of her and found her in the library. She stood on the tips of her toes, hands braced on the side of a basin in which was contained a map of the underworld. She bent closer and closer to the watery surface, and the moment made Hades anxious because the basin doubled as a portal. One touch, and she would be transported to another location in the underworld. Normally, it would not worry him so much because he could quickly retrieve her, except he knew how her mind worked, and chances were that she would end up dropping herself into the flaming waters of the Phlegethon. He chose that moment to make himself known. "Curiosity is a dangerous quality, my lady." Dangerous, infuriating, exciting.
It was multifaceted and had its place, but he'd rather she was curious about other things, like him. She whirled to face him, her pretty green eyes growing wide. Her hand went to her heart, and Hades' eyes dropped to her perfect breasts. For a moment, all he could focus on was the hardening of her nipples, straining against her white top.
"Don't call me my lady," she snapped, and then glanced back at the basin. This map of your world is not complete."
Hades advanced. He liked the way she had to tip her head back just to keep his gaze. He paused inches from her, wishing to close the distance even more, wishing to lift her into his arms and make love to her against this basin. Perhaps they would fall in and find themselves among the flora of the underworld. Gods, how he ached to take her beneath his sky. Her sharp breath drew him from his carnal thoughts, and his gaze moved to the water. She turned to face it, her back to him now. This position was no better. From here, he could draw his arm around her waist and seal her back to his chest, press kisses to her neck while his other hand explored, roving her breasts, down her stomach, and between her thighs. He shook those thoughts from his head. "What do you see?"
"Your palace, Asphodel, the river Styx, and the Lethe. That's it. Where is Elysium, Tartarus?"
He smiled at her eagerness to understand the underworld, even if a part of him felt uneasy. If he had it his way, she would never explore the mountains and caverns of Tartarus. That part of his realm was a manifestation of his soul, dark and harrowing. "The map will reveal them when you've earned the right to know."
"What do you mean, earned?"
"Only those I trust most may view this map in its entirety. The map was a true weapon, and Hades let few have access to it, among them Thanatos and Hecate."
"Who can see the whole map?"
Then her voice tightened, and her eyes narrowed suspiciously.
"Can Minthe see it?"
Her jealousy interested him, and he could not help goading her. "Would that bother you, Lady Persephone?"
"No,"
she said quickly, and let her eyes fall to where her hands rested on the basin. She was lying. He could hear it in the inflection of her voice, see it in the language of her body, taste it in the air between them. He should challenge her, much as he'd done the day she'd come to Nevernight to demand answers for his bargains. "Will you speak of how you flush from your pretty head to your toes in my presence, and how I make you lose your breath?" He could point out that she had not put space between them since he approached, but she had been leaning closer to him the longer they spoke, arching her back in a way that drew attention to her curves. It made him want her even more, and he knew if he kissed her now, she would let him take her. Their coupling would be hard and fast and desperate, and it would be full of regret. He could not love her and have her lie, so he turned, needing distance, and retreated into the stacks, but she followed him, suffocating him with her heat and her smell. She struggled to match his stride, panting out,
"Why did you revoke my favor?"
"To teach you a lesson," he replied, not looking at her.
"To not bring mortals into your realm?"
He thought it was odd that her thoughts went to Adonis and not Orpheus. He was not sure what to make of that. "To not leave when you are angry with me," he said.
"Excuse me?"
She halted, setting aside the books she carried, and Hades turned to face her. His heart raced, and he questioned whether he could have this conversation. "You strike me as someone who has a lot of emotions and has never been quite taught how to deal with it all. But I can assure you, running away is not the solution." "I'm really one to talk," he thought. He was giving this speech for his own sake as much as hers.
"I had nothing more to say to you."
"It's not about words," he said, frustrated, and then paused to take a few breaths before explaining, "I'd rather help you understand my motivations than have you spy on me."
"It was not my intention to spy," she said. "Hermes..."
"I know it was Hermes who pulled you into that mirror,"
he said gently. This was not about the mirror at all. It was about changing her opinion of him. I do not wish for you to leave and be angry with me.
She shook her head slightly, brows furrowing, and asked, Why?
Because. He felt stupid. In all his lifetimes, he had never had to explain himself. It is important to me. I would rather explore your anger. I would hear your advice. I wish to understand your perspective.
She started to speak again, and he knew what she would ask. Why?
So he answered, Because you have lived among mortals. You understand them better than I, because you are compassionate.
She looked away, a faint color in her cheeks. After a moment, she asked in a quiet tone, Why did you help the mother tonight?
Because I wished to, he said, and he could practically feel Hecate's eyes rolling.
You can do better than that. I said communicate. And Orpheus?
Hades offered a raspy sigh, rubbing his eyes with his forefinger and thumb. Hecate was right. He had to do better with his explanations.
It isn't so simple. Yes, I have the ability to resurrect the dead, but it does not work with everyone, especially where the fates are involved. Eurydice's life was cut short by the fates for a reason. I cannot touch her.
But the girl?
She wasn't dead, just in limbo. I can bargain with the fates for lives in limbo.
What do you mean, bargain with the fates?
It is a fragile thing, he said. If I ask the fates to spare one soul, I do not get a say in the life of another. It meant that another life in limbo would be taken, something Hades tried hard not to think about in this moment.
But you are the god of the underworld.
He was, but that did not mean he would overrule decisions. Even if he could, he'd learned long ago there are consequences for such actions, and some burdens he was unwilling to bear. There was always a greater purpose at work, and for him to interfere would mean ruin. And the fates are divine, he said. I must respect their existence as they respect mine.
That doesn't seem fair.
Doesn't it? Or is it that it doesn't sound fair to mortals?
Persephone's eyes flashed, a hint of her glamour reeling beneath her skin. So mortals have to suffer for the sake of your game?
It is not a game, Persephone, least of all mine, he shot back, frustrated. Had he not done a good enough job explaining the balance of the underworld? Or was it that she really wanted to think the worst of him?
So you've offered an explanation for part of your behavior, but what of the other bargains?
Hades slanted his head, his brows slamming down over his eyes, and he took a step forward. He did not like her question. He had answered this. Was she still not satisfied with his answer, or was she angry about her own bargain? He expected her to back down at his approach, but she did not, remaining where she was and lifting her chin in defiance.
Are you asking for yourself or the mortals you claim to defend?
Claim?
Again, that light in her eyes stirred, and Hades wanted to smile at it.
Yes, my queen, let me feed that fire, awaken your power.
You only became interested in my business ventures after you entered into a contract with me, Hades pointed out. It was true. Would she have started this witch hunt had he let her leave his club unattached?
Business ventures? Is that what you call willfully misleading me?
So this is about you.
What you have done is unjust, not just to me, but to all the mortals.
I do not want to talk about mortals. I would like to talk about you.
Hades leaned in closer, guiding Persephone toward the bookcase. His hands caged her, one on either side of her face.
Why did you invite me to your table?
Persephone looked away, and Hades' eyes lowered to her neck as she swallowed.
You said you'd teach me.
She whispered the words, and they skittered down his spine, making him shiver.
making him want to press into her, to cradle her softness between his thighs.
"Teach you what, goddess?"
His lips dropped to her skin, and he brushed the column of her neck. He felt her shiver as he whispered words against her skin.
"What did you truly desire to learn, then?"
"Cards."
The word was breathy, and the air between them was thick, a tangible weight full of erotic thoughts and fantasies. Her head fell back, supported by the bookcase, and her hands gripped the shelves as if she were fighting her own instincts and the voice in her head that commanded she touch him too. His lips explored, and as he pressed a kiss against her breastbone, he looked up.
"What else?"
She met his stare then, eyes fire bright and searching. Their lips grazed each other's as they shared a breath.
"Tell me," Hades begged. "Tell me you want me," he thought, "and I will take you now."
He would lift her into his arms, part her legs, and settle between them. The friction would release their passion, shake the earth, and reverse rivers. It would end worlds and begin them. It would change everything. He waited, and her eyes fluttered closed as her lips parted, inviting his own. She took a breath, her chest rising and falling against his own. He leaned in, ready to capture her mouth when she admitted the truth.
"Tell me you desire me."
"Just cards."
He drew away lightning fast, despite his raging desire, and attempted to mask his frustration at her response. It took some effort, and his fingers curled into fists, nails piercing his palms. The pain made it easier, helped him focus on something other than his hard-as-steel cock.
"Fuck me," he thought.
If she would not own up to her lust, he would not continue to make a fool of himself. "You must wish to return home," he said, turning from her and leaving the stacks, pausing to look back.
"You may borrow those books if you wish."
She blinked, as if she were under some sort of spell, before gathering the books and following him into the main part of the library.
"How? You withdrew my favor?"
"Trust me, Lady Persephone,"
he said, keeping his tone void of emotion.
"If I stripped you of my favor, you would know. It would be painful, like skin stripped from bones."
"So I'm Lady Persephone again?"
Her voice held contempt, and he wondered at her response. Was she angry with him?
"You have always been Lady Persephone, whether you choose to embrace your blood or not."
"What is there to embrace?"
she asked, and did not meet his gaze. "I am an unknown goddess at best, and a minor one at that." Hades frowned. Those beliefs were the bars that kept her true nature caged.
"If that is how you think of yourself, you will never know your power."
Hades had nothing more to say. He had a nymph to interrogate, energy to expend, and Persephone had made it clear she wished to leave. He started to gather his magic and teleport to Nevernight when her sharp command stopped him.
"Don't! You ask that I not leave when I'm angry, and I'm asking you not to send me away when you're angry."
He dropped his hand.
"I am not angry."
"Then why did you drop me in the underworld earlier?" she asked. "Why send me away at all?"
"I needed to speak with Hermes," he said.
"And you couldn't say that?"
He hesitated.
"Don't request things of me you cannot deliver yourself, Hades."
He stared at her. Her line of questioning helped him understand a few things about her. He had hurt her feelings when he dropped her in the underworld earlier. She felt ignored and discarded.
"We are equals," she'd said on their second encounter, when she had come to ask that his mark be removed. She was making the same plea now.
After a moment, he nodded.
"I will grant you that courtesy."
She exhaled, and Hades wondered if she had expected him to say no. The thought made his chest tighten.
"Thank you."
Her words relaxed him, and he extended his hand.
"Come,
We can return to Nevernight together. I have unfinished business there.
She shifted the books in her arms and took his hand, and they returned to his office. Her gaze fell on the mirror over the fireplace and then wandered to his.
How did you know we were in there? Hermes said we couldn't be seen.
I knew you were here because I could feel you. She shivered visibly and withdrew her hand from his. Hades mourned the absence of her warmth. She picked up her backpack where she had left it and heaved it onto her shoulder. On the way out the door, she paused and glanced back. She looked so young, so beautiful, framed by his gilded doors, and he wondered what the fuck he was doing.
You said the map is only visible to those you trust. What does it take to gain the trust of the god of the dead?
Time.
Hades saw Persephone out, despite her protests. He knew she feared being seen with him, and really, he could not blame her. The media was ruthless and obsessive, and they tracked gods like prey, hoping for a shot that would perpetuate sensationalism and gossip. Some of his fellow Olympians loved the attention, but Hades had made it a goal to avoid them completely, going so far as to post guards up and down his street, on roofs, and in buildings around his club to keep his privacy.
Antony will take you home, Hades said, having already summoned the Cyclops. He stood outside Hades' black Lexus. He expected Persephone to protest, but she looked up at him, a gentle expression on her face.
Thank you.
She climbed into the back of the car, meeting his gaze through the window as Antony closed the door. Watching her leave felt different this time, like they had found common ground, like they were closer to understanding one another. And he felt hopeful. As soon as his car was out of sight, Ilias approached, handing him a file he had created on the dryad who had followed Persephone into his club. He glanced over the content and handed it back to the satyr. Thank you, Ilias, he said, and vanished, appearing in the small room where the dryad had been held. She screamed when she saw Hades and shrunk against the wall, shaking.
Rosolva Lacaios, assistant to Demeter. Funny that your resume does not also include spy.
She spoke softly, voice quaking.
Please, my lord?
I will be brief, he said, cutting her off. You have two choices before you. Either you lie to your mistress and tell her Persephone was not here tonight, or you tell the truth. He moved toward her as he spoke, and the girl cowered.
If the first, you risk the wrath of Demeter, he said.
If the second, you risk my wrath.
You are asking me to do the impossible.
No, he said. I am asking you, which of us do you fear more? Chapter 15. A Game of Trickery. It was early when Hades made his way to the underworld stables. They were located at the back of his estate and just as grand as his castle. Marble floors lined a wide aisle flanked by stalls with glossy black doors. Hades had four sable black horses, Orpheus, Aethon, Nycteus, and Alastor, who occupied each pen, and as he came into view, they neighed, pawing the ground with their hoofed feet.
Yes, yes, I know. You are wasting away in these stables, and you want to go for a run, he said as they complained noisily. I'll bargain with the lot of you. Be good while I brush your coats and trim your hooves, and I'll let you roam the realm.
They snorted in response, an agreement.
Who wants to go first?
They were quiet. They were fire and brimstone, and they had seen battle as Hades had seen battle. Despite how he tried to care for them, their spirits were wild, their dreams haunted. They were tortured like he was tortured.
Come now, the longer you wait, the further you are from freedom.
That got their attention, and they all responded at once, knocking against their stall doors. Hades grinned and laughed.
One of you will just have to charm me.
He sidled along the marble walkway, pausing at each stall.
Alastor?
He questioned, and the horse mewled. Of all his horses, Alastor was the most gentle, an irony considering in battle he was known as the Tormentor. His memory was long, and he never forgot an enemy.
Orpheus, the beast whined.
Athon?
The stallion blew a harsh breath from his nose and knocked against his gate, the most aggressive of the four.
Nycteus,
the youngest of the four, snorted. Hades chuckled and then approached Athon's stall.
All right, since you were so vocal.
He opened the gate, leading the beast to the wash station in the stables. He did not need to secure him to keep him from running off. Despite their wish to roam, they would not disobey their master. Hades began the process by cleaning Athon's hooves, prying dirt and mud free from the soles of his feet. After, he curried the coat, loosening mud and grit and dirt. As he worked, he spoke.
Hecate tells me you four have been grazing in her mushroom grove again.
They snorted in denial at the accusation.
Are you sure?
They shook their heads, neighing. Because Hecate said she called to each of you, and you fled like shadow, eyes aflame. They were all quiet. Then Alastor brayed, and Hades laughed.
Are you suggesting Hecate hallucinated the whole thing?
The four snorted in agreement.
While I don't doubt Hecate's use of hallucinogenic mushrooms, I also do not doubt your use, he said.
Hades moved on, working the knots free from Athon's mane and tail. He brushed his coat two more times with a stiffer brush and a finishing brush. Last, he used a damp cloth to clean around Athon's eyes, muzzle, and ears.
Off you go,
he said, and Athon hurried from the stable into the early morning of the underworld. Hades moved on to Orpheus and then Nycteus, and last, Alastor, repeating the same steps of cleaning hooves, coat, and mane. As he wiped around Alastor's eyes, he asked in a quiet voice,
Are you well, my friend?
The horse stared at Hades with dark eyes, and within them he saw the depth of his torture. Of the four, Alastor was the most haunted. He often separated from the others to wander alone, needing the isolation to fight his own demons. Hades understood. The horse exhaled quietly, and Hades brushed his snout.
I would mourn the loss of you, he said, but if you need to drink from the Lethe, I will grant your wish.
Alastor offered a snort and shook his head, declining the offer. Hades grinned.
It is just an offer, he said, on the table, if ever you grow too weary.
He finished cleaning Alastor's ears and stepped away.
All right, my friend, off you go.
As Alastor raced from the stables, he passed Minthe, who approached Hades with a smug expression on her face. He wasn't sure why, but dread pooled in his stomach at her approach.
My lord, she said, I have news.
Hades focused on cleaning up, not meeting her gaze.
And what news is that, Minthe?
It's something you'll want to see, my lord.
He hung the last of the brushes on a post near the wash station before turning to look at her. The nymph held up a paper, a copy of the New Athens News. His eyes were immediately drawn to the cover story, which included his name. Hades, God of the Game, by Persephone Rossi. Hades snatched the paper from her hands, staring at those bold black letters until they blurred across the page.
It seems your precious Persephone has betrayed you,
Minthe was saying, but her voice sounded far away. He was too focused on the words his goddess had written to pay attention.
In my short encounter with the god of the underworld, he can best be described as tense. He is cold and boorish, his eyes colorless chasms of judgment set within a callous face. He lurks in the shadows of his club, preying upon the vulnerable. Hades felt a rush of embarrassment and shame and anger. For a moment, all he could think was, "So this is what she truly thinks of me." And yet he could not reconcile how she had acted in the library the night before, the way she had leaned into him, the way she had parted her lips, ready for his own. He had felt her passion just as acutely as he felt his own. Could these really be her thoughts, her words? Was she trying to cage her heart? He continued reading. Hades says the rules of Nevernight are clear. Lose against him, and you are obligated to fulfill a contract, one that exposes his debtors to shame. And while he has claimed success, he has yet to name a single soul who has benefited from his so-called charity.
So-called charity.
He gritted his teeth. He was plenty charitable.
How is she supposed to know? I haven't told her, he countered.
I will visit Dimitri today. Persephone will never write again, Minthy said. It was the usual avenue. Anyone who photographed or wrote about Hades usually found themselves out of a job and unable to be hired. No one wanted to incur the wrath of Hades, and despite how this article made him feel, he could not take away Persephone's dream.
No, Hades said, and the word was harsh, a mix of alarm and frustration.
Minthy's eyes widened. But this is defamation.
Persephone is mine to punish, Minthy.
The nymph's brows narrowed harshly over her burning eyes. And what is your idea of punishment? Fucking her until she begs for release?
Fuck you, Minthy.
This isn't you, she argued. If it were any other mortal, you would let me do my job.
She is no mortal, Hades snapped. She is to be my wife, and you will treat her as such.
Silence followed, and after a moment, Minthy spoke, her voice shaking. Your wife?